Hey, good afternoon. Dr. Lee Merritt, once an orthopedic and spinal surgeon, and now your professional medical rebel. And thank you for joining us on the Grassroots Warrior Network. You can also find me at the Medical Rebel channel on Rumble and on Telegram, FreedomDoc1. So today I have a guest. Angela is an insider in the medical world, and she's a nurse, long-term 18-year nursing. And she was in quality assurance during the time of COVID, during the age of COVID. This is like love in the time of cholera. We're going to start calling this the age of COVID if we don't move on to the age of stupidity. But in any case, we're going to bring her on, and she's going to talk to us about a variety of issues related to we didn't learn things because the government told us any data. We learned things because we talked to people on the inside that we knew. So let me just bring her in here. Thanks for joining me, Angela. So you were, I know you were cancel cultured for not taking the vaccine and not getting tested all the time, which I think was a good thing because who knows what we're on those tests, but you were in quality assurance, right? You're the people that collect all the data on people in the hospitals. I know we quality assurance would come along, and they'd always kind of. It wasn't that we didn't want to do quality, but we just didn't. It was tough to comply with all the rules and regulations. So it was tough. But anyway, what did you see any problem in 2020, the year of the great outbreak, the great pandemic?
So I saw a lot of issues starting in 2019, and I'm going to kind of go back a little bit because I started in quality review. And again, that's just creating data, presenting it to the doctors and the providers to say, this is what's going on. Is this what you're treating? So it drives the money. So looking back now in end of 2018 through 2019, they were where I was working at in the middle of the nurse's station, looking at the charts. They were rewiring everything within the hospitals because they were upgrading the hospitals. Now, looking back now, I know what they were doing was putting in the 4G and the 5G systems, which was very interesting. Yeah. And then in the fall of 2019, that's really when you started to see everybody talking about this respiratory flu. You know, this new respiratory flu, it's really hitting people hard. But we were still coding the flu at that point in time. And if you know about quality review, you cannot actually be admitted to the hospital for flu. You have to be admitted for the symptom that requires hospitalization, like respiratory failure. That's what would get people in. So in 2019, there was a lot of talk, but looking at the charts, it really wasn't all that different. So it just didn't match with what people were getting alarmed about with what was actually in the documentation, black and white documentation. So in 2020, a lot of my colleagues, they were talking about, oh, did you hear about this thing in China? Did you hear about this virus? Did you see this patient here? And it just did not make sense because again, if you don't rush in with the emotional response and you just look at the data, there really wasn't a change. You know, people get the flu in the fall. Our system runs a bit slower. You know, we get more sluggish. We hold on to our toxins and we get sick, you know.
Yeah. I have a whole talk about what the flu season's really all about. It's not about a virus, but go ahead. Yeah,
that is true. That is true. So my oldest son, I put him on a bus to go on a plane to go off to, to boot camp on January 28th. And he called me in March of 2020 and said, because they couldn't get any access to the outside world. And he said, Mom, what's going on? Everybody's talking about a virus. What is going on out there? And I said, you don't need to worry about it. I am telling you. And again, this was March of 2020. I am telling you, son, you're in the best place possible because you do not have access to the TV. You do not have access to the internet. And I'm telling you, yes. And what they're doing here, it's not true. That's all you need to know. Focus on what you're learning. Don't worry about the outside world. And hopefully things will come out to balance. But I will tell you right now what they are saying. There's a lot of lies. And again, this is March of 2020 when I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I knew it by then too.
So I also because I was collecting the data and things did not make sense, I investigated the Spanish flu because I remember Trump saying, oh, this is like the Spanish flu. And I was like, well, what the heck is the Spanish flu?
It's exactly right. But but most people don't understand what that was.
That's exactly right.
It was three things. It was electromagnetic hit. It was followed by a bad vaccine and a bad medicine. Sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
It is. So I did that deep dive because I'm the kind of person where I can review charts, but be listening to a podcast at the same time. And it actually makes me more efficient because it works both sides of my brain. So I would be listening to things and then reviewing the charts. And I was like, this is totally not matching up. But the Spanish flu was a very good piece of the puzzle to learn about that. And again, that was like March of 2020 when I understood what the reality of the Spanish flu. There was a really, really long documentary. It was like an 8-hour documentary that tied all of the pieces together. And so I was like, okay, this is what they're doing. So in April of 2020, I sent my first email to the CEO and the CMO of our hospital organization saying, I'm looking at the data because that's my role for you as the organization, and I'm not seeing what you all are saying. I'm not seeing an increase in deaths. I'm not really seeing an increase in severity, but I am seeing that we, in the first few months of this year, January, February, and March, we were treating people with hydroxychloroquine, and they were getting better pretty quickly, and they were going home. But at the end of March, beginning of April, we stopped doing that. And so people are not getting better. So can you help me understand why we are not utilizing a medication that we're already seeing in these first three months of this year is helping people, but now we're not doing it? Help me understand the thought process behind that. And within 30 minutes, the CEO responded to my email and said, you know, of course, thank you very much for your email and your concern and the hard work that you do for us. While HCQ is a great medication for a lot of things, in this particular situation, it is risky at best and possibly lethal at worst. And they quoted the Lancet study, which a month later was debunked. But they said, we have partnered with NIH and the CDC, and we have three trials that we personally, as a hospital organization, are piloting with the NIH and CDC in order to treat this novel virus.
They were getting money not to use hydroxychloroquine, a cheap and effective drug, and to use, and then you're going to hit it probably with remdesivir and some other things. What are the three drugs?
Yes. So, you know, and of course, you know, my response is a little bit of panic because one, the CEO did respond to me. And he's basically trying to shut me down. But I already had collected my data. I already knew what I knew. So I did go home that night and I told my husband, I need you to understand something because I need you to prepare for what's coming. And I said, I just put a big red X on my back. And what's going to happen within the next 12 months is they're going to create a vaccine for this novel virus. They're going to force it on us in the medical field. I will never take it. I will never do this testing. I was barely wearing my mask. I mean, I would put my mask on to go into the hospital. It would be hanging off of one ear the whole time because I wasn't doing direct patient care.
Right.
You know, and I was not sick.
They didn't care, but
yeah.
But so what was the NIH going to trial you with?
Well, the remdesivir was the first one. There was some oxide. I can't remember the exact name of the medication. Yes.
Well, actually, that was one that actually probably worked. So nitazoxanide is an antiparasitic as well.
Well, no, not nitazoxanide. It's a nitric oxide. So it was something it was something they were putting into the ventilated patients were going to try. And it was supposed to open up the lungs. Now, they did not do it for very long because it had some very, very negative effects.
Okay. I don't know what that was.
Yeah. And I cannot remember of the other medication they were using, but of course they have to ventilate quicker. And I'll tell you one thing that I would see, because most people, you do not automatically ventilate. You know, if you're in the 90s, you don't ventilate.
No.
You know, you wait until they drop down in the mid 80s. But when people would come through the ER and they would be sitting at 93, 94%, they put them on oxygen. and they wouldn't just put them on just a little oxygen. They would put them on like 4, 5, 6 liters of oxygen. And of course, we know the more oxygen you give a person, the less they do their natural respiratory and the quicker you can get them on a vent. So it just, you know, because that's
when we're sedating people to put them on vents. That's what we also know that. And I didn't know this, but Scott Shara told me this because he's got a lawsuit going about his daughter, Grace.
Yeah.
That I think that this is, I think it was the NIH. It was somebody or the FDA or the hospital union. It was some group, a medical group in America, bought up in like at the worldwide stores of a particular, I don't know if it was midazolam. That drug that's a sedative. I never even knew about midazolam before this, but they bought up this huge amount of it. They basically cornered the market, and then they were pushing it on every patient. And that's what actually, I think, killed Grace. I mean, that's what the contention is, because she was doing better until they sedated her with that. And then, of course, her respiratory system went out.
Well, I will tell you, I'm familiar with that drug because I did hospice for 10 years. And so Versed, I think, is the other name for it. So
that's Versed. Okay, then I do know about that. But it's just
Yeah.
And why would you give that? We use that for very short acting stuff. I mean,
or if you're doing palliative sedation. So in the hospice world, when you have somebody that has an end-stage disease and they want to be kept comfortable.
Right.
And they're struggling with their respiratory system. That was part of the protocol that we created for palliative sedation. And again, you know, I'm not a Kevorkian. I don't believe that you push people over, but I do know that the body gets to the point that it is not going to recover at some time. You know, we all will get to that point.
Yeah, there's a point to ending suffering, but then there's another point that people that could recover may not if you over sedate them and then make them respiratorily incompetent. So
So it makes sense to do that in the hospice, you know, terminal situation when you are at the end of life. That's one thing, but to use it on a healthy person that just came in with a little bit of issue, it just didn't make sense. Yeah, so that was another
his
thing.
Daughter was 19. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I will tell you too, you know, I would watch the charts because I worked in this field for 18 months after I put that big X on my back, and to read the charts, to watch the progression after they initiated these medications, the death protocol, and come home. And I would tell my husband, you know, I got to, you know, because not all of them hit you as hard as some, but the ones that are young or the ones that are the frequent flyers from the care places, like, you know, there's a place in our area that has a lot of mentally disabled younger people that come in, and to see them initiate that protocol on them, they would test them when they came in the hospital, of course, for COVID. And if they didn't test positive the first day, they would continue to test every 2 days until they got a positive. And then as soon as they got a positive, they could initiate their protocol. There was a higher reimbursement.
Oh, yeah.
Once you initiated the protocol, the highest reimbursement other than ECMO is over 72 hours on a vent.
Yeah.
So if they could keep them on a vent for over 72 hours.
And then it's okay to kill them, I think.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you've gotten the maximum payment at that point, because I saw people after 3 days, then they wanted to terminate people. I heard that story a bunch.
Yes.
Now, when you were in the hospital, were you interacting with or were you working from home at some point? Did they shut? Because I know a lot of our coders and things ended up working from home. Was that happen to you?
That did end up happening. So we were in the hospital setting. They sent us home. I think it was the end of May. They sent us home the end of May. We were home for about 3 months. And then they had us come back part time. So they like would split our group.
You were still in the hospital and chatting with people. Did you get a chance? I mean, did you talk to any, were there any doctors that were uncomfortable with this?
There were. There was a few doctors that I'd actually known from back when I did hospice. So even before I came into the quality review nurse role, and I knew they were Christians, and I knew that they thought the way I did as far as ethics and morality. One of them, she said, you know, I'm not going to get the shot because I've already had COVID. You know, I had it, None of my family got it. You know, I just stayed away from them for like 3 or 4 days and I'm fine. So I've got antibodies. I've got natural antibodies.
This is what the doctor was telling you.
This is what she told me.
Yeah, well.
And so when the mandate came out, I went and I spoke with her and I said, what are you thinking? What are you going to do? And she said, well, I've already got the shot.
Oh.
And I said, are you kidding me? But you told me that you would not get the shot because you've already got antibodies. She said, I know, Angela, but I got to tell you, I have to keep my job. I'm just trying to do my job, keep my head down and not make a lot of noise. And I said, but you see what's happening to people, right?
At that point, yeah, they should have been seeing the deaths and the things happening.
Yeah. But she, you know, and I had that conversation with three different ones of them, and every one of them would tell me, there's nothing I can do. I just got to keep my head down and wait for this to go away.
They could stand up. They could say no. And I'm going to tell you that without Obamacare, without bringing everybody into the hospital as employees, it wouldn't have taken much. When I was a surgeon in private practice at a 250 bed hospital, if five of us in the OR, the big five surgeons, had walked into that hospital and said, we're not doing this. And if you force the staff to get these injections, we're going to walk to another hospital. It probably would have stopped. Probably would have stopped right then. But you see, this is not being run independently by the hospital. This is just not a bad, this is the problem when you can have bad local ideas, but people that are good can get those stopped. When you have a bad idea that's being run at a national level by evil people, it's not going to stop with you doing anything. And you can walk, but you'll never go anywhere else.
Right.
Because nobody, you know, they don't care right now about the money that the doctors brought in from doing quality surgery. They cared about all this money they were getting from these death protocols, which is just, this is unbelievably evil. I mean, just like, where was everybody that had a conscience? Where was the Christian community? I'll just say, not that they're the only ones with a conscience, but that's the one that surprises me the most.
Well, and there was so much fear, but I will tell you this. I always look for the silver lining, and the people that have come into my life in the last 3.5 years, they're real people. They're genuine people. And so one of the first connections I made when I was sitting there doing my documentation, one of the young new nurses on the floor, she was raving about the governor of Kentucky because he was putting all these lockdowns in place. And she was from across the bridge in Indiana, and their governor was not putting the lockdowns in. And she was very young, had a lot to learn. And I couldn't help myself. I said, you know, a lot of us actually envy your governor, because a lot of us that are actually looking at the data can see that there is absolutely no reason
to lock everybody
to put these lockdowns in place. So you might want to do a little bit more searching.
Think of our words. You know, I learned this from a couple sources, but, you know, I've got a friend that trained as an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and he said that Hebrew is like the inverse of English. English was apparently created for spell casting. I mean, that is where English actually comes, you know, has been manipulated. I mean, it sounds crazy maybe, but I think it's true. If you just listen to our language, so listen to the name, you know, lockdowns is something you do to prisoners. We never talked about lockdowns for any medical pandemic in the past.
Yeah.
You know, you might quarantine the somebody with really a severe disease, you know, multiple drug resistant tuberculosis. Yeah, you might quarantine that guy until he's actually been treated. But that's the patient. That's not the entire well people in the state. It's amazing. So the language should have told us what was going on here.
Well, and the whole testing. I mean, I refuse to test, period. Not one time.
Yeah.
I've taken one test. And I never forced it on my child. I never. And the fact that you have to prove that you're not sick. Well, if you know about the mind and you know about emotion and you know about
you can make people sick.
You make people sick by continuing to focus on, you got to test to make sure you're not sick. No, I'm not.
I don't know if I told you this, but you know, when I say I've been talking about, I really think we live in the Truman Show.
Yes.
And but why did Truman, if you saw that movie, right, with Jim Carrey. So I didn't see it until about a month and a half ago, but I decided to watch it because it did sound like a metaphor for today. And he was 30 years old till he figured out something was not right. But everybody in his life were false people. The whole thing was false. Why did he believe it? Because it was internally consistent. It sounded good. Yes. It sounded good that he was afraid of water. It sounded good that, you know, you had this, you lived on this island and you just been there all your life and never gone. But it just didn't make sense when you took a step back. Well, for me, the PCR test was very much that.
Yes.
You know, at first we all heard about, you know, Carrie Mullis said you can't do this with them, and they were overcycling the tests. In fact, I mean, you, and you know this, but just for the audience, that, you know, we were told by Thermo Fisher, was one of the companies that made these tests, said you can cycle them up to 20 to 30 cycles of amplification. It's a way you take a very tiny amount of material and make it big enough you can actually deal with it. So you can cycle it 20 to 30 times. If you go over 30, you're going to get a lot of false positives. If you go over 35, the test is basically meaningless. Yes. The United States Army was cycling it 45 times, and this was being done all over the world. I mean, I saw 55 times some places. That was when I think 17 hospitals or 18 hospitals in Florida had 100% COVID positivity. Yeah. Because you can make anything positive if you cycle it enough. So that was my first kind of, you know, there's something wrong. But then I took those 18 tests that they each had. There were 18 different tests for COVID that were on those PCR tests. With each of them had 16 bases on the swab stick. And I ran those bases through the BLAST program, which is your like Wikipedia. It's your encyclopedia of genetic sequences to tell you where it came from. Now, this, I started doing this in September, October of 2020. So at that point, there had been a lot of people putting a lot of these SARS-CoV-2 stuff up into the gene data bank. So this should have been there. But when I put the first one in, it came back Homo sapiens gene 8. In other words, it came back to our own. And then the next one was Homo sapiens gene 5. And then I did 12 tests. They all came back positive for Homo sapiens. This sequence was a Homo sapiens sequence. It was a human sequence. And I said, damn, these people, these psychopaths are testing to our own genome.
Yes.
That's when I knew this was at a level of evil you can't even imagine. And it's unbelievable.
It was. Well, and I'll tell you, so one of the reasons I would not ever consider doing that testing. So all three of my children had the flu in 2018. You know, my oldest came home. He had almost had a wreck on his way home. I looked at him. I knew something was off, put my hands on him. I was like, okay, you probably got the flu. Go to bed, get you some chicken soup. We'll go test tomorrow. We did test, but you know how they tested for the flu? They had him blow his nose into a glove. They took a little swab in the Petri chest, put it into the testing to see if he had A or B, flu A or B. That's all they had to do.
Well, and even then, since we know now that you can't isolate the influenza and there is no influenza virus, I'm absolutely convinced.
Yeah.
I mean, that may sound crazy to people, but what we call influenza didn't exist in a seasonal situation until we laid down the telegram lines. Yeah. That would have nothing to do with the virus. Yeah. So we can now show that there's no proof of a virus. You can't, you cannot culture viruses like you culture bacteria. I have a whole hour lecture on this, but so it's what it really happened to your kids were, it was winter. They weren't getting enough sunlight to offset the toxins in their body. That's what happens. You toxify your body and you let every cell in your body is a battery. You add toxins and you decrease your cell battery, and then you get sick and you can't get rid of it because you don't have the ability to extrude it. You know, and anybody that works in a lab, they know about, you know, gel electrophoresis. That's how you test for stuff in the lab. And that's it works the same way as your body extrudes toxins. It has to have charge separation.
Yep.
Well, Grandma was right when she said, get some rest. You've let your batteries run down. So, you know, your kid goes off to college and they stay up late. They start drinking alcohol for the first time. I'm just making not your kid, but I'm just saying, make this up. You know, they start drinking alcohol or they do things. They eat they feed them a terrible diet now at college. It's not home cooked. It's all this, you know, Monsanto based food. I mean, it's just horrible stuff. And then they come home and everybody thinks they got sick because their roommate and everybody in the dorm was sick. No, they got sick because all those kids had been poisoned and they weren't getting out in the sun to offset it. So we know how to make this better, and we can't keep falling into this I mean, I don't mean to take your time, but I just had to say that because I don't want people to keep taking this idea. There's nothing we can do about it except stay away from people and put on masks and take these shots and get tested. These tests, to me, I wonder what they are testing for in influenza. Yeah. They're testing for something. It's either they're testing for certain things that your body extrudes when it's sick, mm-hmm. and some of them come out looking like one thing and some of them come out looking like another. And that's why they took, because I'm going to tell you, the next pandemic, so-called pandemic they declare, I'm going to tell you what they did. They took the COVID test and they just stuck a new label on them.
Yes, I agree.
They don't have a test that they're testing to. They're testing to genetic sequences that probably are in us. And they're just cycling it however they want to make it positive. They want to make a lot of people positive, they tell the labs to overcycle it. They want to keep a lot of nobody positive, they tell you to undercycle it. It's going to be that simple.
Yeah.
It's all artifact. Same thing with electron microscopy pictures of what they call viruses. It's made by the artifact of production. That's not true of bacteria. You can culture bacteria. You can genetically sequence bacteria. That's a different issue. But you can't do it with viruses.
Yeah.
That's the big lie here.
Yeah. And there, and as you know, there is an emotional component. In fact, I think emotional is the biggest component because all three of my children did get sick. You know, it started with the oldest, then it went to the middle, then it went to the end. I was interacting with all three of them throughout the whole course and I didn't get sick.
Right.
But I continued to nourish myself. I continued to be out in the sun. I continued to ground myself.
And they may not have done that. Or if you're close enough, the other thing we do know is that there's electromagnetic transmission of cell damage photons.
Yes.
In other words, when you get sick and cells start to die in your body, they give off an ultraviolet photonic emission of some sort. We know this from the work of Kaznacheyev in the old Soviet Union in Novosibirsk. And they give off an electromagnetic photonic emission. And so it could transmit that way, but it's not because of you getting a virus.
Correct.
And again, if your batteries are well charged and your immune system is good, you won't get it either.
Right.
You know,
right.
So detoxify yourself and take care of yourself. That's, you know, my favorite is, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I can't sleep the night before I get on a plane. I guess it's just anxiety of missing the plane. So I just don't sleep well. So I get like 3 hours sleep maybe. And then I get up and I get on the plane. I can't sleep on the plane. The plane has now been, you know, toxified by all these antiseptic sprays they put on it, that this is going to recycle in the plane forever while you're driving or you're flying 4 hours or whatever it is to get to Florida. And then when you get down there, instead of going out in the sunlight, you got to go to a meeting. But that night you're going to meet your friends and you're going to have drinks and too much food and you're not going to sleep that night. So you've gone a couple of days without sleep. Now you've had alcohol and other toxins that you've been exposed to. And you're wearing your, and when you start getting sick the next day, you blame it on the guy coughing on the plane.
Right.
It's the most absurd thing in the world.
Yeah.
No, it's because you ran your immune system down. We tend to go to these meetings in the winter. We don't tend to go to these meetings in the summer. It's always, and so all this stuff happens when we're just not treating, we're not thinking clearly. And that's the problem. We're not thinking about this problem because they've made an artificial reality. And the artificial reality is I can make you sick with this virus. That we got to get out of that, or we're just going to play disease whack-a-mole every time they want to give us a new disease. That's the craziness here.
Yeah, it is. And all it would have taken, just like you said earlier, all it would have taken is a handful of the people they could not afford to lose, you know, your surgeons, you know, to stand up. But I will tell you, in my department, there was nobody else. And they didn't ridicule me for not participating.
Well, that's at least not to your face. That's pretty good. I mean, and you might have been quiet about it. I got ridiculed. You know, I went from being a fairly well-respected spine surgeon at one point in my life to being a bloody idiot in about 6 months, even though I tried to publish I finally did publish it on very early on data from the VAERS that I showed that this is causing horrendous bleeding problems. Initially, it was bleeding because I recognized that there was the OBGYN doctor down in Florida that died. It was so unusual. I said, there's something not right here because you don't die that quickly of thrombocytopenia. You can usually supplement the platelets. There's something else going on here. Well, and it turned out when I looked at the VAERS at that point, which was in February of 2021, okay, this was only been the mid-January or mid-December was when the thing started. So this hadn't been very months. And there was already a clear signal. There was clear excess mortality and morbidity. There were clearly unusual things happening, and yet nobody would publish the paper. Nobody would even look at it. So,
Yeah. Now, you know, so we fast forward through. So I did send lots of emails to the CEO and the CMO from April of 2020 all the way until the week before I lost my job in November of 2021. And I would send them the VAERS data. I would send them links to a lot of different documentations, the White Coat Summit, you know, so when you speaking on the Capitol, I sent that link to them. So they did not, it's not like they did not have the information. They had the information. They chose to ignore it. And I will tell you, so there was four raises that I actually did get until I lost my job. Because the whole hospital
said. What was the reason? Just because you wouldn't take the shot? Is that what they told you?
Well,
not to say my business. You don't have to answer that. If you know
why I lost my job?
Yeah. What did they say?
Not in compliance. And so they waited until a Friday, and my manager called me on that Friday. It was the 10th of November, and they had put out a deadline for November 10th. I believe that's what the day it was. That if you did not do the testing, so I did have a religious exemption. So I did not have to take the shot.
You weren't in compliance with the testing.
I wasn't in compliance with the testing. So I did a religious exemption. With my religious exemption, I also included that I would not participate in any testing. And the reason I would not is because it was a procedure that invaded my body, you know, because it was all the way to the brain. And it put me at risk. And I also cited the fact that I was doing case reviews where people were having cerebral spinal fluid leaks.
Yep.
And dying.
You were.
Brain abscesses and dying. And so I was not going to participate in a procedure when I'm not sick that puts my life at risk. And that was in my religious exemption. Yet they still said, you're out of compliance, you're not testing, so you no longer work for us.
You know, what's interesting is, and I think this, if I were a lawyer out there, and if I wanted to get involved in a class action lawsuit, this would be one that seems to me doable. Because if you know the way hospitals work, for years, there are so many doctors and nurses, but mostly doctors who just wouldn't take the flu shot, even though it was required to be in compliance. So clearly, they made exceptions in compliance in the past on economic basis.
Yes.
But they wouldn't do it now for anybody, for even a religious basis.
And there were
no proof of the testing working.
There was. But there was other nurses that were not in the quality review nurse role, but they were in direct patient care roles that did not test and did not take the injection, that did not lose their job.
So there you go. It was because you were in a key position to know the lie.
Correct. And I would not stop asking questions.
Okay. If there's a lawyer out there, I don't like lawsuits generally, but you know what? These people have to be held accountable, you know, by their own rules. You know, my big thing is we live in a Babylonian legal system and a Babylonian money system. And I keep saying, once you're in a false reality, you can't vote your way out of it, you know, and, you can't vote your way out of tyranny. You also can't vote your way out of a false reality. But the good news is once you realize it's false, you can just step out of it. There's a way to get out of this. But here's a situation where going in, playing in Babylon makes sense to go and take them down hoist them by their own petard, as they say. You know, these people violated their own principles.
And we did end up talking to, and when I say we, there was a group of us. I mean, I found the other ones that were awake. It was like walking through the matrix. And then every now and then somebody would say something and you would look at them and you'd make eye contact.
We knew.
And then you would come and you'd talk and you'd connect. And then you'd bring these other people in. So there we ended up that there was a huge group of medical professionals, you know, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists. And we did come together and we did talk about getting a lawyer. There was a couple lawyers that I did talk with the case. But at the end of the day, you had to pay them X amount of dollars. And I'm going from a very good paying job to, you know, my unemployment got denied because I was out of compliance. You know, I wasn't.
See, this is it. Now, let's just think about this. How many of these lawyers used to go after that? We called ambulance chasers basically, but they'd have these class action lawsuits about a bad drug.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and they didn't ask you to pay into it.
Right.
They searched you out, but I'm going to tell you, it was hard. We could not, no lawyer. And I talked to a bunch of them initially until I figured out about getting out of this legal system. We tried to, those of us that got investigated by our medical board in the state of Iowa, just for speaking, we tried to get a lawyer to represent us. And I'm not kidding you. You can't believe all the guys that were so-called the good guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't even call you back a lot of times. So I think because they knew this was at a high level of evil. This wasn't like the bad drug that the pharmaceutical companies could easily absorb the suit money, and they were just kind of skimming off the coffers here. This was a like an edict from the satanic cabal that said, you won't get involved in this. You guys, this is one of those things we need to run this. Don't even think about it, or we'll thump you like a, you know, squish you like a worm.
Yes.
I think that's what was going on.
I think so too, because we talked with politicians, you know, local senators. Nobody wanted to. They felt bad for us. They hurt us.
They'll shake their head and they'll pretend to be complicit. But these are the same people that pretended they didn't know about the Ukrainian bioweapons labs.
Right.
I mean, you know, come on.
Right.
These guys, again, that's just in my opinion, that is a clown show in D.C. This is not real. These guys don't. You know, what are they going to do? They don't ever change anything. If they wanted to balance the budget, they could have done it easily. Yes. And if they wanted to stop this, they could have done it.
Yes, they could
even have. When they knew there was a problem, they could have done something, and they're still letting it go. If they're worried about it, they'd stop all vaccine mandates right now. Everybody, because it's illegal. It's immoral anyway. Make it absolutely. You can't do it, or we're going to take you to court. That's be simple, but they never do that. So I don't trust them. Never trust the government with your health.
No, the government, the lawyers, they're bar attorneys. They work for a private membership association, and we're not in it.
And it's actually a foreign private membership association since it's the British Agent Registry.
It is. Yeah. And I'll tell you another comment that I got, and this was from people in my family, and this was people that, you know, we were trying to get to advocate to stand alongside of us, is, I don't think this is the hill for me to stand on. Or this is not the hill for me to die on. And my response to them, because I had my, you know, people in my own family tell me this.
That's going to be the hill to die on, but you didn't think you were going to do it.
Yeah. But I told them, I said, you know, I hear you, but I'm telling you, this is it. Because if you fall for this, if you will take this injection, then everything else is going to come down the pike. You're going to fall for. So you better stand now. You better decide what you're made of, because if you're not willing to lose everything for what you know is truth, then you might as well just
and save your kids. I mean, to be very honest, I mean, I didn't come into this fight reading the Bible, okay? I just didn't. I, you know, one of the people that went to church as a kid, grew up, you know, kind of fell away from all that. But I'm going to tell you, if people didn't recognize this as the mark of the beast, I don't know what else is, because this is the beast system.
Yes.
What you're buying into when you go along with this, you are buying into this ancient Babylonian beast system. And we just need to start calling it what it is, because it is a control system that's going to make the Soviet Union and every other totalitarian society we ever saw look like, you know, choir girls practicing. This is going to be nothing when you have things in your body that they can connect to.
Yes.
And they can connect you to the Internet of Things, which also, by the way, Merck, it was bought in-brain neuroelectronics during this whole thing of the vaccine rollout. So it's connecting your brain to it's like the Borg. This is the Borg coming, and it's not just going to be, you're not just going to be in 15-minute cities. You're going to be in 15-minute cities with mind control.
Yes.
Because they want you as a little serf. They don't want you, these uppity humans that think about liberty and things like that and want to be left alone. We can't really deal with that. We're going to have to mind control them. And we know the patents. We've seen the patents we've known it since the 60s about patents on mind control, electromagnetic wave type stuff. So what other hill is there to die on?
There really isn't.
We die on a lot of stupid hills. This is the one to die on. I don't want to die. I want my enemy to die. I'm like Patton, you know.
Well, and if you know that this world is not our home, I mean,
Right. This is Satan's. I mean, I get it now. This is Satan's realm. Yeah. And that's why I just couldn't believe the church is putting up these vaccine things. Because I thought to myself, these guys are like lifelong Christians. They claim they're lifelong Christians. Do they not see that this is Satan in the street trying to kill your children?
Well, and they were making money off of it too. And I know we,
the several churches of us were.
Yes. Yeah.
Now,
yes.
I didn't know. You just hit me with something new. How are they getting money?
Yeah. So by putting up a testing clinic on their property, they got a kickback. They got a donation for having the COVID.
Well, that's even worse. I'm more disgusted to hear that than even to think they were just misguided.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were several of us that went to the elders in a couple different big mega churches in our area and talked to them about the immorality of having a COVID clinic to do the testing on their property.
It kind of went like this, right?
Yeah. Well, there was some of them within those churches that are not with those churches anymore because they have seen the light and they have stepped out and they stood on truth. But the majority of them, yeah. But they got government money. They got government funding to have a COVID clinic on their premises.
Yeah.
Which is
Think you get to be, it's like true. It's like, I don't think you get to be, a mega church. I shouldn't say that because I'm not condemning every mega church. And I'm not condemning every system, but the bigger your system is, the more it looks like a pyramid structure, the more you're going to find evil at the top of it, because that's what evil does. You know, children of God living on the land, taking care of their families.
Yes.
We don't need a pyramid structure of power. You only need that to control people. So if you have a big enough church to need, you have to have deacons and people that kind of run things, and you have kind of a pyramid of power. If you become too effective and too big, somebody is going to infiltrate that. And and you may not have started with evil at the top, but you're going to have evil at the top at the end. I mean,
you are.
I don't care. And it's not just the churches. It's corporations. It's anybody. When you get big enough, government. Government's your classic example. But that's why the symbol of the Illuminati. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've looked into the 501c3. Or not.
Yeah, you don't need it. Churches don't need it. Anybody that takes that, you're taking their rules. Get out of Babylon, guys. I didn't go to church. I didn't rejoin the faith in order to have you participate with these guys.
But I think that may have been a push for the churches that were 501c3s, because a 501c3 makes you a state church.
Right.
It makes you beholden to the state and the state's rules. And when the state changes their rules, you have to abide.
Right.
So there's only a couple churches in my area that are not 501c3s because the pastors did their research and they realized they don't have to be. There is they have already got autonomy written into the founding documents.
Right. That's what, and I'm going to just say that if anybody wants their pastor to understand this better, I speak for the Liberty Pastors of Edmond, Oklahoma. It's Pastor Dan Fisher and Pastor Paul Blair, and they're standing up the Black Robe Regiment again.
Yes.
In other words, the preachers that used to preach the words of liberty from their pastors during the Revolutionary War to, get us to be free. They have stopped doing that because everybody's so worried about losing their tax status. Well, it turns out you can't lose your tax status, but you can be controlled by them if you become a 501c3. So if you have that, you should just let it lapse. Don't even renew it. Just let it go, because in fact, these are the guys that with Matt Staver, they got together and they sent letters in. They preached a political sermon from their pulpit. They taped it. They made manuscripts of it. They sent it into the IRS and nothing happened. And so the next year, like it started out with 6 of them doing this. And then it went to like 30 of them the next year. And then it was 150. And pretty soon the IRS finally, I think, went to Matt Staver, who's a lawyer and a minister, and said, okay, we give up. We got to admit to you. We can't do anything about your we can't take away your tax exempt status. That's a constitutional guarantee.
It is.
That is hysterical, but it just that's the whole issue. False reality. We are in a reality and we have to realize that we can't, if you want to not be subject to all these whims. Like you said, when you sign on that, you become a state church. When you sign on to being a Medicare and Medicaid doctor and take all this insurance stuff, you're taking their rules, and you may not like them. I know you won't like them. We didn't like them in the 90s when I was in practice, in 2000s. I mean, I when I was in private practice from, you know, for 25 years, yeah, I took those stuff. And because I was a trauma surgeon, and if you didn't take it, then you'd go broke, because you'd all night long, you'd work for free. And I got to tell you, I wouldn't do it again. I mean, at some point we have to stand up against that. We have to figure out a way to do things and not be a part of that, because it's very, very hard. Once that kind of a system gets into place, it's like I used to say, I was president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and we've been the ones fighting against government medicine since 1943, when we saw what happened to Nazi Germany. But what we, what we always used to talk about is, you know, if all orthopedic surgeons in the country decided we're not gonna take Medicare anymore, what the problem is, at that point, you all stand up and do that. You've got a lady with a broken hip sitting right there. What's going to happen? You know, in other words, there's got to be, it's the patient that's going to suffer in the interim before we get this system corrected. Now, the system's going to collapse, but I don't know how you make the transition.
Well, I'm going to make two comments. One, on the surgical side, I don't know if you're familiar with the Oklahoma Surgical Center.
Oh, yeah. No, he's one of our members.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yes. No, I know him, but, yes. Yes. And they are great men. And you can get any surgery and you know exactly what you're going to pay. And I know we did a Zoom call with them a couple of years ago just to kind of understand how their structure was set up. Because, you know, our hope was we could actually set up a freestanding hospital in our area for the people that were not playing the game. You know, that was our
here's
hope.
Here's what you learn from their experience.
Yeah.
You know, and I can tell you this, our experience in doing a private surgery center too. Mm-hmm. Or outpatient surgery center. The problem is, even if you don't take Medicare and Medicaid, to be able to run that kind of a hospital, you have to, at this present time, they won't certify you to be even running the hospital, even doing any surgery, unless you get certified by Medicare and the government. So you have to meet the Medicare standards, and they have to come and certify you. You can't get as long. That's why we looked at setting up a private hospital too, but we had to do it offshore.
Yeah.
We almost did this down in Antigua or someplace. The AAPS was going to do that with volunteer doctors. And everybody rotate down there 3-4 months a year. I was ready to do it tomorrow, but the problem is there was a lot of, it was like political unrest at the time. We didn't think we could do it, invest all that, and then have it happen. But that's the problem, is they've got us captive. We're being held captive to the medical, societies here and the whole demonic system that they set up. But yeah, I like the idea, but you could do it. You nurses, I'm telling you, all you need, how many people would stay out of the hospital if you could get outpatient oxygen and outpatient IVs and maybe some antibiotics?
And I will tell you, we were doing like on a one-on-one basis, there were several people that we, and when I say we, you know, just individual people, just as one person to another, this is not under a license. This is simply providing care. You know, if you need help, we'll come help. And there was several of us that did that. Yeah.
See, that's what I think. And I think it would be okay to have a cash pay club. Okay. You're going to do it under a club. I wouldn't be a PMA. I wouldn't get in bed with the government in any way. If you have to file legal papers in the Babylonian system, I wouldn't do it. But how about just in a church? It's a church thing. And you just go out, and that's your ministry. And you go to people's homes, and in addition to praying over them, you give them an IV.
Exactly.
Know? I think that's where this has got to go.
I think so too. And I there's several that, and including myself, that do that. And it's just a private relationship, because this is one person caring for another person with the skills that God has given us. So that is definitely viable. But what I learned is that all the hospitals, at least in my area, are all 501c3s. I did not know that hospitals were 501c3s until 2020. And so if you think about that, so nonprofits, which are not nonprofit at all, all that means is all the profit they make, they pour back into themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's why you see them giving raises. You know, so that's why all the medical people that stayed. Yes, buildings. You see buildings, empty buildings with their logo slapped on it. Yeah. There's nobody working there, but they have to purchase those buildings because they can't make a profit, at least a profit as far as people could see. And all that does is keep them away from having to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, if you look at it, it is such a scam.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing. But I do think, in since we're getting down to the hour here, I think in closing, I think the point is, you know, you bring up the point about to get out of the system and not need these hospitals. Yes. Like you were going out to people's homes, but you could, so that's one of the things that people could do if they wanted to do something good for their community is nurses and doctors, say retirees, people get together and set up some system, and you could do it for cash. You could do it for charity. You could do it for barter. You know, yes. I got paid. I did house calls for a while, and I used to get paid in, beef patties and things vegetables. Like that from the local farmers, you know, but, That would be a huge service to your county and to your town. That's one of those ones we have to start with our families first and then our towns. The other thing is what we have to break free the answer that one of the problems is I couldn't get oxygen for people as an outpatient. They would not, but there's a way around that too. And I learned this from a friend of mine who's a welder. You get industrial oxygen, and that is, you can do industrial oxygen and they actually have
cannulas.
Yeah, the cannulas and everything to go with it. So you can convert industrial oxygen to that, and that may be an answer. I mean, we have to make these people irrelevant. That's what we're going to have to do. And it doesn't take much. And I think when we add the chlorine dioxide is a great way of dealing with you can actually treat practically everything. The problem is that it's not as quick for some things as it might be. You know, there's some things I still think antibiotics make some sense for. If you've got severe pneumonia, you may not have time for the chlorine dioxide to work. I mean, I think you do, but you may not. So sometimes there's a bacterial pneumonia. And I know that the terrain people think you never need antibiotics, but I've seen too many pneumonia people try and die because it takes you down so fast, or an open fracture, things like this. I mean, there are sometimes you need that. And we've got to get a way of having pharmaceuticals broken out of the pharmacy cartel.
Well, and you can have it because there are some of the direct care physicians in town that could speak up because they had their own private business and they weren't beholden. And they would have the medications and the antibiotics they needed right there in their office.
Yeah, that's
so they did not have to get permission to dispense what they already had. So that's another huge thing.
I learned when you do that, you have to have a DEA license. So, you know, if the government decided to get draconian, they would, which they already are, but they would, if they wanted to pick those guys off, they would get them on some technicality because they had a DEA license and they weren't doing something or whatever. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, once you're under any kind of government aegis, they'll come into your office. They can always find fault. They can always find a way to take you down.
I think that as we continue to navigate this new world that we're living in, you know, this new age that we're in, I think that people are going to realize we have the healing and we have the answers within us.
Right.
You know, we are divinely created. You know, everything that we need, God has given us. And if we become more proactive, aware of our bodies, coming back into balance, you know, I'm very much into energetics because, you know, emotions, because if we can say, okay, something's off and you just bring yourself back to center and you teach the little ones to do that and you teach your family to do that, it would be an amazing community to have that kind of holistic
and light therapy. I honestly think we're coming into the winter season here, and what people need to be doing right now is decreasing your toxic levels. So look around your house, get rid of all these stupid Lysol things. And I'm not picking on Lysol. I'm just all these antiseptics. Don't use those alcohol things on your hand. That makes things worse.
Yes.
And get rid of all the toxins in your house. I even make my own soap and everything. Yes. I mean, I don't use any of that. I don't, when I go to a hotel, I even hate to be around it because it's so strong with perfume. Get rid of all that stuff so you're not getting that. You know, I'm not saying you have to get rid of all your glasses of wine, but don't be drinking a lot. Don't be doing things that put, don't ingest bad foods, and bad drink.
Yes.
In the winter, especially, you can get away with more in the summer. You can be a little worse on your diet in the summer, but in the winter, you got to be very careful and get into an infrared sauna or get into a tanning booth or go to the south. You got to get light this winter. That's what's going to keep you from getting sick.
Yes. That,
and then I take, I can't tell other people to do it, but I take chlorine dioxide every day, and I do a parasite protocol that's on my website. And, you know, and you got to mitigate the electromagnetic frequencies.
I think
that's really key.
And I think that's energetic too, because, you know, if you can put a barrier around you, like for instance, going back to when my three kids got the flu, you know, or the flu symptoms, I had an energetic barrier around me. So I knew I needed to be the caregiver. I knew I was well, I knew it, and I was. So if you know it, then you are well and you can heal. You know, I was listening to a chiropractor on a podcast this week, and he was calling it, instead of calling it disease, he was calling it dis-ease.
Right. That's what I do too.
Yes. I love that.
That's where the word comes from.
Exactly.
Anything that gives you dis-ease is a disease, but people have decided disease is primarily when you get this little flying unicorn involved. It doesn't involve that. It's about dis-ease. And there's a big, well, you know, all the times that we used to say in the hospital, look, all the doctors and nurses, we're around these sick people all the time and we don't get sick. Because why? We didn't expect to get sick. That's
right.
It's not just, they always want to say that you are exposed to all this stuff. We weren't exposed to it. I mean, you know, really, like, I don't remember getting sick for 2 years in medical school while I was first going into the hospital. I just never got sick because I couldn't afford to be sick in the medical school. And by the time I was an intern, I couldn't afford to be sick. We were just not sick.
Yes.
So I think it's because you're right. We're the caregivers. We don't get sick. They get sick.
Right. Right. Well, and it's kind of like when I was doing hospice, people are always amazed that the nurse could come in and say, this is the time frame you have based upon all the clinicals that we see. But you got to remember, when someone has verbalized a time frame to you, your body will follow.
It's a spell casting.
Now, I will tell you, I mean, there is a process that the body goes through when it is in the shutting down process. And so that's what we as nurses would use to make our educated guess. But that person, unfortunately, 85 to 90% of the time, when they would hear that and the family would hear it, they accepted it as truth. And so it was.
Right.
But every now and then it wasn't.
And you see that in the primitive cultures. And I shouldn't use that term primitive, but cultures that don't have modern medicine. And they're talking, basically, the witch doctor can cast a hex on you and tell you he's just cast, you know, he's going to make you die. And people will die from that because they believe that they're going to die. Yeah. If you believe that you're going to die at 80, you're more likely to die at 80.
Yes. With COVID was the fear. You know, you bring them into a lower frequency so that they're fearful, and then you speak death over them. And then that is what happens. And there's so much power in the word, positive and negative. And so
creative power. That's the logos, you know, in the beginning was the word. So we speak reality into existence, which is why we have to be very careful about our language.
Yes.
And I think we haven't been paying attention to that, but we do that. And that's why I believe that some doctors, it's not just technique in the OR. It's not just technique. You know, some doctors can give the same medicines as others, but they seem to get better outcomes. And I think it's because they project, and nurses, they project wellness to their patients. I don't disagree with that at all. I think that's really what's happening.
Yes. And it's going to be a very interesting future. I'm not saying there's not going to be more bumps in the road, but I think the light will continue to shine out, and the connections that God is intending right now are going to be amazing connections. You know, I didn't expect to see you at Bard's Fest. In fact, I wasn't even going to stay. So, you know, so the fact that we connected, It was something that God intended.
And that was a great time. I didn't expect it to be a revival. But that's what it really was.
Yeah.
You know, speeches and you know, connecting with God.
And that's what we need. We need people to remember who we are, you know, in God's image. If we can remember who we are then the light will come through this. And then the people that choose the darkness, well, they choose it. And I don't know if you read all of the C.S. Lewis chronicles with, you know, the ended with the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and Nephew. Yeah, those are a great series. I reread them to my youngest recently in the last couple of years that I read them to my adult children way back when. And when I read them again, I realized there is so much truth, especially for the day we're living right now.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I would.
Yeah, I would probably benefit by going back through them.
Yeah. It's very enlightening. Yeah, but I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you for joining me. And are you doing anything where people, you should have a podcast. You should get out there and start doing something. You could get a community, because I'll tell you why I say that. I think every county needs somebody that will put out what's going on in the county on a regular basis. Just have your friends tell you, put it out there and have a regular, you know, like little radio Podbeam thing, so that once a week people can turn their radio on when they're driving and find out what's happening in their county. Just keep it in mind. You'd be a good candidate for that in your county. Because I think we need the committee of correspondence, essentially, like we had in the revolution.
Well, we definitely need people to wake up. I mean, one of my main goals is to be active in the community, talk to other people, connect them with other people. The farmers, you know, getting to know all the farmers. I went to a educational last night and it was excellent. And he was talking about the solar farms, and there's a lot more to that we really need to dig into, because it is not what they are selling us as a great thing. There's a lot of destruction that's happening to the environment.
I was in Arizona, and trust me, those things are evil. I mean, they kill everything around them. They just, even birds flying over them. I mean, it's such a heat thing, and they don't replace one coal plant. And personally, we don't need less coal. We need more coal. We need more CO2, at least in the atmosphere. So,
Yeah. And I am back working. So I do work with a holistic doctor's office. So that is a blessing, you know, and I do, like, when people connect with me, I do one-on-one nurse coaching with them, but I'm just waiting to see how God is going to build this community here locally. And my prayer is that that continues, just like the seven pillars that Scott Kesterson talks about on Bards FM. You know, if we can continue to build our local communities, then we have a barrier against what Babylon is going to enforce on it. Because they can only enforce what we say yes to.
Right. And speaking of local community, one of the things that I'm big on is local food supply. So I'm just going to put this out here. And I'm sorry that is, my name is underneath there. I don't know how to get rid of my name. But anyway, this is Midwest Wagyu Beef. And this is in Iowa. This is one of our local beef producers. No hormones, no bad foods. They literally create their own, like, fermented stuff that they feed their own beef. Everything's fed off their land. It's the same food they feed their children. Trust me, that's the safest food. And if you want the best steak of your life, if you go to Midwest Wagyu Beef, help support the program. It's code REBEL. You get 10% off your beef. Help support us. And Midwest Wagyu, it's W-A-G-Y-U, beef.com. So anyway, that's, we appreciate them and all the local beef producers. We need to act locally. We need to keep everybody in our local markets busy.
Yes. So yeah. And that way you know what you're eating.
Yeah.
It's important.
All right. Well, thanks again. We appreciate you, Angela, and our prayers with you. Be safe. Maybe we'll talk again. Let me know if something new pops up, some new opportunity, because I think that I think we're in the rebuilding stage.
I think
we're going to come out so much better when we're all done with this, but people need to wake up. And I would say to all the people that have taken this vaccine, I think you can be helped.
Yes.
I know people that have reversed their symptoms and really gotten better. And there's a way to do it. I've got a bunch of it on my website. Don't think it's doom and gloom, you know, repent, get right with God and seek help. And I'm sure your MD, who's a regenerative doctor, is probably dealing with that. And I think there's answers. So,
there are answers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be blessed.
We'll see you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.